Well, summer has arrived, which means our insect world is in full gear, as we know. And that means we thought it was time for another edition of What's Bugging You, Red River Radio's program about our insect world, with Dr. Beverly Burden, an associate professor of biology at LSUS and our resident entomologist. This program is made possible by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, and tonight we invite you to call in with your questions about our insect world and the fiendish and friendly kind at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Dr. Burden, welcome back. Glad to have you back again.
I'm glad to be back, Bill.
So what has been happening on the insect world? I know we've seen reports about an interesting tick. It's the longhorn tick. I'm not sure where it's from, but I've seen some NOVA articles on that, and I've heard some buzz about that. So what is the longhorn tick that you can tell us about?
It's actually called the Asian longhorn tick, and I find that name confusing because in the insect world, whenever we call anything a longhorn, they tend to have extra long antenna, but ticks don't even have antenna, and they don't have, these particular ones don't have extremely long front legs, and so it's just a well-proportioned tick. they are from Asia. They were first reported just 2 years ago in 2017 in New Jersey, and the ticks that have been tested in the United States do not have any of the pathogenic bacteria that some carry in the Asian countries. But here's the thing that scares people, and that is in the arthropod world, there's something that's called parthenogenetic reproduction. And that's a fancy word that means that the female can lay unfertilized eggs and they will develop into the little seed ticks and then the juvenile ticks and onto the adult ticks. And so there are some problems with a virus also, but it is still also isolated to Asia. And so the CDC and many other vector organizations are really monitoring this. Now, the closest it's come to Louisiana, and I tend to think of Louisiana, but we are Arkansas and Oklahoma and Texas, and there have been some reports in Arkansas, but I could not find the geographical information as to what part of the state in Arkansas they have been found. But, you know, the ticks like these, they're spreading south and they're spreading west, and it's only a matter of time before they reach the entire listening area of Red River Radio. And back to this, they can lay unfertilized eggs, and that's because the development of the eggs is completely different than regular development of eggs and sperm. Eggs and sperm only have half of the chromosome, so when you add half of a sperm and a half of an egg chromosome, you get a full set, just like humans have 46 chromosomes, so the egg has 23 in it and the sperm had 23 in it, and then when they merge, you get back to 46 chromosomes. And so they have a very special type of reproductive capability that allows them to reproduce very fast and a lot of eggs at one time.
It almost seems like it's a mitosis type of reproduction.
It's exactly that, Bill. Look at you in your biology knowledge. You know. It is a mitosis rather than a meiosis type of development.
And we're throwing out technical words here.
I know. We have to be careful.
So how do, I mean, that's unusual in outside of, you know, bacteria, isn't it?
No. Okay. There are lots of other insects that can reproduce parthenogenetically. The first one that comes to mind are aphids, because a lot of people can relate to aphids. And that's one of the reasons why you can have a couple of aphids on your plants today and a lot more tomorrow, because they have that special capability of reproductions. The life cycle of aphids are just unique in itself, because they go through a reproductive cycle and a winged cycle and then a non-reproductive cycle, and it's Yeah, aphid life cycles can be quite complicated sometimes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton, and we invite you to call in tonight with your questions about the insect world, both the fiendish and the friendly kind, at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question regarding our insect world is welcome. All lines are open right now. And in the meantime, we've had some photos that have been submitted. And the first one comes from Alan Dale Gaberhart, who has submitted a very interesting looking spider. Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, this is a green spider. And I forget what flower Alan told me it was on. I'm not very good with flowers. But it has a very characteristic slender teardrop-shaped abdomen and very, very spiny legs. And these are known as lynx, like the cat, L-Y-N-X, mm-hmm. Lynx, because they are ambush predators, just like cats are. And so they tend to pounce on their prey, and hence that's how they got their name. I pick up a lot of lynx spiders when I'm out just surveying the insects in a community where I have my net, and I'm doing what's called sweep netting, and I just walk along the grass and just put my net back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And because these will reside up on high flowers and higher grasses and such, they are easily picked up by sweep nets. And, you know, all spiders are venomous, but, of course, there's only some that are more powerful with venom, and that's, of course, the brown recluse and the black widow, neither one of which is aggressive unless you disturb them. And so, luckily, black widows are not ambush spiders, so that's a good thing.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton, and we have lines open right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We have Nell online. Hold on for just a second, Nell. We've got one more photo I want to go through here from Karen L. McPherson from Pinesville. Sent us two images. And by the way, all of these images are on our website at the What's Bugging You post for this week. And you can see each and every one of the insects that we're talking about. She sent in what I can't tell whether they're caterpillars or worms. They look like some, you know, very interesting black and white stripes, or, you know, multiple colored stripes. They're very, very quite decorative. What exactly are those?
Well, I want to just briefly go back to the lynx spider. Especially males will have structures that are called pedipalps. And sometimes people confuse those for antenna. And sometimes people say, well, that spider has 10 legs and not 8. And so if you think they have 8 legs, 10 legs or antenna, that's just the pedipalps. Uh-huh. And I could go into that for a while, too. Okay, Bill, these black and white striped caterpillars, they are caterpillars. And I had the Caterpillar Book of North America. And one thing, I could find one that looks almost identical to these, except they only feed on redbud trees, and they're called redbud leaf rollers. And redbuds, are a dicot, and this shows the caterpillars on a monocot, like a grass or a corn or something like that, and they're not rolling the leaves. And so, and by the way, the redbud leaf roller caterpillar are very, very small, very, very small. And these look like they're pretty large, at least an inch or so in length. So, Bill, this has me stumped. That's one reason I asked you if these were done in North America. But I guess if they come from the local listening area, it is in North America. But they're not in the caterpillars of North America. And the only thing I could come close in my computer web searching is the redbud leaf rover caterpillar. And because they had the little orange pro legs and the orange head as well. So if it's not that, I don't know what it is.
Could be another invasive species.
That could be. You know, if you ever have a caterpillar that you want to physically send me, just put it in a little vial of rubbing alcohol, or better yet, a little vial of very high concentrated, like Everclear, you know, a liquor that has a high alcohol concentration in it, because that's ethanol, and rubbing alcohol is isopropanol, and they tend to be preserved a little bit better in ethanol. Mm. And so very, very interesting, and they're so gregarious. I mean, obviously, they're all gathered up together there, and don't know. It's a mystery to me.
All right. We've stumped the panel here.
Yeah, well, if I lie and people find out, then I lose all my credibility.
There you go.
And if anybody tells you that they know everything about insects, they are either a fool or a liar.
There you go.
Because, you know, that's just the way it is.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and we have one call online. We lost Nell, so Nell, please call back. And David from Keithville, you're on with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
Hi, good evening. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a question that you've probably answered a million times, but I haven't heard a good answer from other people I've asked, and you might have one. Is there any organic way to get rid of fire ants? In other words, you know, something where you wouldn't have to use pesticides.
I can tell you what won't work. Grits okay. and cornmeal won't work.
They will not work.
Some people have tried pouring hot water on the mounds with some success, but the problem with that, it could be very damaging to the vegetation, you know, especially if it's on turf. Or if it's close to a another type of, like a rose bush or something like that. One thing that you don't want to do, I guess people could argue this is organic or not organic, but you don't want to pour gasoline down there and set it on fire. That's not a good idea. And so there might be some other ways. Digging up the mound on a regular basis will deter them from rebuilding. I've seen that happen in my own yard. I carry a walking stick, and whenever I see a fire ant mound in my yard, I just whack, just, you know, to completely disturb it. And I find that if I do that if I go out there every day, then all of a sudden they're not there anymore. And I've done that in my own yard. But another little thing I should say also, David, is that people say, oh, you just kill one mound, and or you don't really kill it, they just move. Well, that's incorrect. If you kill the queen, sometimes there's multiple queens in fire ant mounds, mm-hmm. and you kill out that mound, what you don't really see what's going on in the yard, David, is that you have other small colonies of fire ant mounds that the major colony is suppressing. And so when the dominant colony is killed out, so to speak, then that allows the other smaller colonies to get larger, and then one will become the dominant.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So those are the things I would try, and those are the things I would not try. But if you get frustrated and you want to go back to a chemical, the best active ingredient is acephate. And
acephate,
A-C-E-P-H-A-T-E. And anytime you buy any type of insecticide, you always want to read the active ingredient that's on the label. By law, they have to put the active ingredient on there. By no law, they don't have to tell you what else is in there. They just have to tell you the active ingredient that is the chemical that's actually going to kill the insect.
Roger that.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Thanks.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, David. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. We have lines open right now. You can get in right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Bob from Junction City, please hang on for a moment because Clay from Shreveport is ahead of you. Clay, you're on with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you?
Doctor, thank you so much for your show. I really enjoy it. I have a question about something called milkweed that grow for monarch butterflies.
Mm-hmm.
And I hoped you would explain to me how it is that the monarch butterfly eats or deposits eggs on the milkweed, and what we should do as far as leaving it standing during the fall when it doesn't look that great, or over the winter.
Yeah,
whether it's okay to chop it down some. And I'm gonna hang up and listen to your answer. I'm sorry if you could just.
That's okay.
Talk about the milkweed and the butterflies. Thank you so much. I really enjoy your show.
Thank you, Clay. Okay, well, there are lots of different species and types of milkweeds. They're in a plant family known as Asclepias. And one thing that makes the monarch unique is these plants produce a compound called cardiac glycosides. And the caterpillars sequester these away in their body, so they kind of hide them away. And then when they become and turn into the adult monarch, then both the caterpillars and the adult monarchs become very distasteful to the birds, and that gives them some form of protection.
All right, Clay, thank you for your call. Sorry about that. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. We had some adjustments there to make. And Bob from Junction City, you are next on our program. What's bugging you?
A few months ago, about 3.5 months ago, my son had a bed bug infestation in his room. We did the whole 9 yards by taking the bed out, actually got rid of the wooden bed, got another bed, did all the fumigation, used the pesticides and all this stuff, put the cover on the new mattress, did everything that I read you're supposed to do. A couple of months later, we had not an infestation, but they came back.
So yeah. Bob, have you been emailing me with your company email address?
I actually did, and I'm sorry. I'm when I'm at work, I have to email through my company.
No. I answered you twice, but it keeps bouncing back to me. In fact, I had the membership director here at the radio station search their records with your name. I won't say your last name over the air.
Right.
And I emailed an alternative address, but I'm so glad you called because I really wanted to talk to you about this.
Okay, good.
Now, first of all, you took everything out of the room,
right.
You replaced the bed, and then you sprayed the insecticide. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you remember what insecticide you sprayed?
Oh, no, and I still have it. It was a bed bug spray that I just got from Walmart.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to look that up, but hopefully the active ingredient ends in the suffix THRIN, like cyfluthrin or bifenthrin, because those are pyrethroids, and those are the chemicals that can be used by the homeowner, and it's safe for pets and people. Now, the first thing that opened up my mind, there's two possibilities here, Bob. One, you didn't get them all in the first place and you just knocked them down.
Right.
Or your son, if he spends a lot of overnight trips visiting other friends or family, and he takes his pajamas in like a backpack, he could have transported them back to the house with that type of activity, because we know that when people go to hotel rooms and most people take all their stuff out of their luggage and lay it on the ground, then the bed bugs if there's bed bugs in that room, they transport them back home. And so it's either a reinfestation of the original colony, or they were reintroduced into the house. It sounds like you did all the precautions you could. Now, it may be also, and this is the fear thing, what if that particular population of bed bugs are resistant to the spray that you used?
Okay.
That could be another factor. And so you might want to go get a different type of chemical. But I'm going to look up and see what the active ingredient is for a Walmart bed bug killer. And I'll know more about that. So that would what you can do. It's a vicious fight. You're just going to have to keep doing it and doing it and doing it. You might try to couple this with steam treatment as well.
Okay.
And you can go on and there's sites on the web that you can compare home steamers to pro steamers. So we call this thermoregulation in controlling bed bugs, because bed bugs are somewhat semi-soft animals. And so they're a little bit more susceptible to drying out and being susceptible to the high heat that's in steam. A lot of people don't realize that steam is actually hotter than boiling water, because that's it has to come up off the boiling water to hit that to go airborne.
Okay.
And just for the listeners that to know, I always tell people that a bed bug is about the same size, shape, and color of an apple seed.
Right.
And so, and they don't have wings, thank goodness. The last thing we want is flying bed bugs. But good luck with that.
Thanks.
And if you go on to the LSUS homepage and look up the biology department, my office number is there. It's 318-797-5088. Mm-hmm. And if this comes up again, instead of emailing me, just give me a ring.
Thank you so much.
Good luck with that, Bob.
Okay.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. We have lines open right now at 800-552-8502. 800-552-8502. We had a caller who didn't want to go on air, but her name is Diana, and she wanted to know about cicada-killing wasp. Keep them or kill them?
Oh, definitely keep them. Let me explain a little bit about what cicada-killing wasps are. And some people tend to call them hornets because they are one of the largest wasp species that we have in the Arklatex area. And what they do is they will dig a hole into the ground, not so much a vertical hole, but they'll start and it'll be at an incline, like maybe about a 30-degree angle down into the soil. They will find a cicada, sometimes what people around here might call locust, and they will take and they will sting it in order to paralyze it. And then they will grab the cicada and carry it, fly it, back to their burrow in the ground, and they will drag the cicada down in there, and they will lay an egg on it, and when the little grub hatch, it will crawl into the cicada and literally eat it alive. And that's how it will develop, and then when it pupates, it will come back out of the ground, which is kind of ironically because the immature cicadas live in the ground as well, so that kind of makes sense. They are not at all aggressive. I've stood with 6 or 8 of them flying around me, and if you don't mess with them, they don't mess with you, and they really are a very good part of what I like to call the urban ecosystem. And so please just let them do their thing, share your backyard with them, whatever, and just tell the kids to leave them alone.
And just don't try to swap them down because
that's just
going to aggravate them. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. We have lines open right now at 800-552-8502. 800-552-8502. Monica from Shreveport, please stay on the line. Woody from Lufkin is up ahead of you. Woody, you're on with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you?
Well, really, there's nothing bugging me, but just a comment about the guy that was looking for alternative ways to get rid of fire ants.
Yeah, what do you got?
What works for me really well is a propane torch.
Yeah, you see, you know, that's going back to burning them out. And that could also, just like the hot water, that could be damaging to the plants around it. Just depends on how much you want to keep the vegetation around the ant. And, yeah, it's the same thing as pouring gasoline down there and lighting it on fire.
A little different.
It is different.
Because you stir through, what I do is I stir through the mound and let them just kind of swarm.
Yeah,
and burn them off and stir the mound and let them swarm and burn them off again. And I've used that successfully. The other thing...
That sounds more like recreation than pest control, but that's okay.
The other thing that has crossed my mind that I haven't done is to take a microwave and jam the switch so it'll turn on with the door open and lay it out on top of the mound and just microwave the suckers. But
yeah, I wouldn't recommend that either because... You know, there's a reason you got doors on those things, and that's to protect us from the rays as well. And
but if you turn that face down, it might work. I don't know. I've never tried that. But the burning them out works pretty well.
Here's the thing with microwaves. Normally, for microwaves to really be effective, there has to be either an appreciable amount of fat or there at least has to be a certain amount of water available. And
yeah.
And
well, that's not a problem in East Texas.
Well, yeah, it could be. But, you know, ants do have a cholesterol in them, and so that would be a type of a fat. And so it's I'm going to have to put a graduate student on this. Go collect a bunch of fire ants and put them in the microwave and see what happens. So that's a good suggestion for a graduate student project there, Woody.
So anyway, I fight them all the time, and, you know, my go-to is a flamethrower.
All right. Safety always, though. Safety always, Woody.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks for your call and your suggestion.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Woody. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. You can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And Red from Jenna, please stay on the line because Monica from Shreveport is up ahead of you. Monica, you're on with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you? Hello, Monica? Okay, well, maybe we are with Red. Red from Jenna, are you online?
Yes.
Okay, well, I skipped right over Monica. Red, you're up next. What's bugging you?
Yes, I got a two-part question.
Okay.
And I'm going to get off the phone here. Near not long ago, I was mowing our front yard, and there was a swarm of ground-dwelling insects. I'm not certain what kind they are. And they just absolutely swarmed the mower. And they just attacked and crawled all over the handles of it's a zero-turn mower, attacked the handles and crawled in the seat, in the back of the seat, and they just were just absolutely furious. And I just left the mower there.
Uh-huh.
And I called my dad. He said, just let them alone. He said, about dark, they'll calm down, and mm-hmm. you'll get your mower then. Just don't cut the deck on. Anyway, I don't know if I have any idea what kind of insects these were. I know there was a wasp or a bee. I have no idea.
A lot of people don't realize that there are ground-dwelling bees. And the almost exact same thing happened to my brother about 23 years ago. There was a field next to my house, and I said, go cut down that cottonwood tree because I just don't like all that cottonwood getting into my air conditioner. And all of a sudden, a bunch of bees started swelling up from the ground when he kicked on that that chainsaw, and he couldn't put that thing down fast enough and run back around to the house to get in. And so I can almost guarantee you it was ground-dwelling bees. And it's not, and there's a lot of people just think, oh, we have honeybees, and we have, we have carpenter bees, and we have bumblebees. But you'd be amazed at all the different types of bees that are actually right here in the Arklatex area, and some of them nest in the ground. You said you had a two-parter?
Yes, ma'am. And the second question was, whenever I was a child, me and my friends would go swimming. And there was these little insects that were in the water, and they were shaped like almonds, but smaller than almonds. And everybody called them apple bugs. And you could pick these bugs up and hold them in your hand, and they were just harmless insects. And we'd just throw them back, but you could put them up to your nose, and it would smell just like a green apple for some reason. And it was strange. You know, it was like really, it would really just knock you down how this little harmless insect shaped like an almond would smell just like an apple. And I've never found out what kind of insects those were. And they were water-dwelling insects. Have you ever heard of this?
The first thing that comes to my mind, because they are harmless, are you familiar to what whirligig beetles are?
Whirligig, yes. I've heard of that name before.
Okay. And they swim on the surface, and they are shaped like an almond, but smaller than an almond, and or almond, and it might have been those. If it's a little bit smaller than that, then there are these little insects that we call water boatmen, and they actually have legs that go like oars, and they'll swim up on the surface of the water, but they're pretty small. Don't know if they would be them. And, of course, you didn't describe the water striders. There's also another bug that comes in different sizes, some very large, some very small, that are called water beetles. And they, I'm surprised if you said they're harmless, because water beetles are not harmless. They will actually take their beak and stick it into your skin, and it's a very painful bite. And so if you ever get a chance to send me a picture of one of these things, I would love to have a visual to go with it.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, well, thank y'all.
The coolest thing about whirligig beetles is they actually have two sets of eyes, one so they can monitor what's going on top of the water, and another set of eyes so that they can monitor what's going on below the surface of the water. And I don't know of any other insect that does that, and that's just too cool. That's like high tech right there. So, thanks for your call.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, and you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. We have lines open right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502, and you can get in right now with your call. That's, again, 800-552-8502. David from North Louisiana, please stay on the line because we've got Monica up next. I skipped over you last time, Monica, and you are on the air now. What's bugging you tonight?
Thank you, Dr. Burton, for your insightful program.
Thank you.
I try to listen to it every time that you're available.
Thank you.
He got my name wrong. I am Veronica. I want to talk to you a minute about Gulf Frillary butterflies.
Aren't they beautiful?
They're wonderful. But I have a Passiflora incarnata, and they just destroy it every year. So I'm wondering what I could do to control some of this activity.
You're talking about that the caterpillars destroy the plant?
They do. They defoliate it completely.
Yeah, that's the problem with having what we call a butterfly garden, Veronica, and that is people want to attract the adults, but by attracting the adults are attracted to certain type of plants. And then they lay eggs on the plants, and then here comes the caterpillars. And I get a lot of calls about that, and I basically say you can't have the butterflies if you don't have the caterpillars. And that's just, it goes hand in hand like that. And so, you know, the cool thing about the adult Gulf Fritillary is I go to a lot of community events, and I take my insect collection out there to show the people. And I'll pick up a Gulf Fritillary, and I'll say, look at this beautiful orange and dark brown and black butterfly. Isn't it gorgeous? And I'll have it on an insect pin, and then I'll flip it over and kind of twirl it a little bit. And I'll say, but don't forget to look at the underside, because they have all those beautiful silver spots on the underside of the wings. And so I would say what you might could do is plant extra plants, and so that you can tolerate a certain population of them. And or you could, the caterpillars are easily seen with the naked eye. You could actually go out there and just hand pick them off the plants. And
I do.
Yeah, that's what I would suggest. But you can't have the butterflies without the caterpillars.
However, they just, after a certain point, they just increase their population so much that they actually defoliate the whole vine. It's like they call their brothers, their mothers, their grandfathers, their aunts and uncles, any friend that they know, and they all come and diverge on this plant.
Well, you might...
Can I use a hose to knock off some of the eggs?
You could try that.
Because I have gone out and done taking the butterflies off. I throw them into the pasture so the birds can have them.
The other thing you might try is instead of planting them in a clump, disperse them throughout the yard. And so that way the adults will have a little bit of a harder time finding. That's the problem with what we call monocultures in agriculture. If you drive down Highway 1, you'll see either fields and fields of soybeans or fields and fields of cotton. And it's not hard for the pest of those two plants to find them because they're so widely planted. So you might diversify your plants a little bit, and then don't plant them in solid clumps.
Well, all I have is one vine, but it's about 40 feet long. The other problem is I'm the only one in my community that has this Passiflora incarnata. And it's like, I don't know how they find it. They must zoom in it. I think as you were talking about earlier, is there some sort of hormone or chemical that they
insects
practice?
Insects are extremely, they can detect chemicals in the air that we don't have the capability of smelling. On their antenna and in other places on their body, they have what we call chemical sensors or chemosensors, and mm-hmm. they can smell certain smells for miles and be attracted in there. And so that's not going to help you at all. It's just, and there are, you're absolutely right. I don't know about the caterpillars of the Gulf fritillary, but there are some other insects that once they find a suitable habitat, they will release a pheromone called an aggregation pheromone that will attract other insects of their own species to that location. And so, you know, the insects have already figured out everything that we think we know. You know, they're just amazing.
I got you. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for your help in this regard and for your explanations about what's going on.
Well, thank you for your call, Veronica.
You bet. Bye.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton, and we have lines open right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Sarah from Central Florida, you're on next. What's bugging you tonight, all the way from Central Florida?
Yeah. Good evening. I heard somebody try to see if they could identify a kind of insect that they had known growing up, and I can't find anything on the internet about it. But when I was in church growing up, we had what we called roly-polies.
Mm-hmm.
Called them roly-polies. And we just pick them up out from the leaves in Central Florida, and they would get onto our hand. They look like a little tiny black bug, but they curl up and, you know, to like protect their inside. And he'd sit there for about a minute or so, and then it would get confident again, and it would start crawling around your hand. And then if it got nervous again, it would ball back up. And then, I don't know, I think they're kind of cute, and I've never seen them anywhere else, and I don't even know what to look for to find anything out about them.
In order to find roly-polies, and that's a very good common name, it's used throughout North America, a lot of people think that they are insects or related to the spiders, but what's really cool about roly-polies is that they are one of the main completely terrestrial crustaceans, and they have two pair of antennae, and they are harmless, except sometimes, kind of like millipedes, they can release a substance through their membranes that can be rather smelly and off-putting, but they're harmless. But if you want to find roly-polies, take an old board or a tarp and make sure the underside stays moist, and you leave that out there for a couple of weeks, and you go turn it, remove it, and you're almost guaranteed to have some roly-polies in there.
Do they have them in Louisiana?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Really? They're ubiquitous. They're cosmopolitan. They're everywhere.
So they're actually crustaceans. They're not insects?
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Oh, my goodness. That's so funny. That's
yeah.
Like crabs. Okay.
Yeah. It, scientifically, we call them isopods because their segments are of equal length, and that's actually what allows them to roll up into the little balls, and kind of like an armadillo does.
Oh, wow.
Yep. Thank you for your call, Sarah.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You bet. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. We have lines open right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question regarding our insect world is a fair game. And we're going to go next to Dennis from Shreveport. Dennis, you're on with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you?
Thank you. I have a two-car garage that works. Serves as a shop, and I have brown recluse. So I went out to Amazon and bought these six little plug-in sound wave things that you can't hear. You plug them in, there's a little, I'm sure they emit some sort of sound wave, but I don't know if they're working or not. What do you think about those as repellents for spiders?
If they worked, I would know about it, and everybody would be buying them left and right, because people just have this innate fear of brown recluse clothes, because they see all of these terrible photos on the internet that, you know, like the whole hand has been rotted off, and that is extremely rare cases. If you let a bite of a brown recluse go that far, you're an idiot. And you can get antibiotics and you can get treatment for it at the clinic. But garages are a perfect habitat for brown recluse, because there's all these places to hide. I know I used to find a lot in my garage. In fact, every brown recluse in the collection in the biology department at LSUS came out of my house or my garage. And that's because I know what to look for. And you can spot them a mile away if they're up on a wall. And see, brown recluses don't really make a permanent web. Their web is kind of like a wispy threads. And so let me know if you think that they work, though. I'd be interested to know, Dennis.
I've seen less of them. But they're still occasional on a wall. But
yeah.
I agree. I'm scared of them. But anyway, I will just see what happens. But
yeah,
months I've seen less.
I'll do some little research into this area, too, and just to see what I can find out.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton, and we have all lines open right now, so you'll get right in at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. So we're going to go down the list of photos that we had sent Dr. Burton that had been sent in, and this one came from an email address or a person who goes by the name Female Titan Queen. And I'm not sure where this person is from, but this is a scorpion. And I wanted to just get your impression of what kind of a scorpion this might be.
Well, by looking at the size and the color of the scorpion, I think that's probably some kind of a book or manual that's on the floor next to the duvet that they show that the scorpion is on. It is not native to the Arklatex, to the listening area here. It's probably going to be a little bit further west, because the scorpions that we have here are probably, even on the larger side, is about half or a third of that size. And so the good news about the scorpions that we have in the Arklatex area is that they are venomous, to be sure, but they're not lethal. And it's pretty much very similar to a wasp or a bee sting, unless, of course, somebody is super sensitive or hypersensitive. And they might go into anaphylactic shock, of course. We've all heard of that. But scorpions are not aggressive if you leave them alone. If you're messing with them, or if you go to pick them up, or they're in your shoe and you put your foot in there, yeah, they're going to react to that, and they're going to sting you with that stinger that's on that tail. And so I hear a lot of people, when they call me with scorpion questions, the first thing I ask them is, have you moved into a new subdivision? Because scorpions always tend to be a problem in new subdivisions or new houses, because you've destroyed their habitat. Mm. And if you can see light under or above a door or a window, then a scorpion can get in. And they probably don't even really want to get in. They're out there hunting. Scorpions are nocturnal predators. And one fun thing to do is to buy you an ultraviolet, a UV light, and go outside at night and just shine it around your house or out in a field, because the exoskeleton of a scorpion fluoresces under UV light. And that's one way that people can determine whether they have a scorpion problem or not. And then the other reason sometimes people might have problems with scorpions is that they don't want to go walk that far in the winter to get the wood for their fireplace, so they store all their wood up by the back door. And that's perfect habitat for scorpions. And when they're out hunting, they can easily get into the house if there's an entryway in. And so That's my spill on scorpions, Bill.
There you go. And so of all of the varieties of scorpions, are there any that are seriously deadly that live in our area?
No.
Or are most of them just irritants?
Irritants. Out in the Southwest, there are some larger, blacker scorpions that can be more of a health risk, but not in our area.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. We have lines open right now. You'll get right in at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And Fritz from Kilgore, you're on next. What's bugging you tonight, Fritz?
Sure. My name's Chris, actually. But
they type it and I read it.
No, thank you. And thank you, Dr. Burden. I was work on a lot of air conditioners, and we get a lot of, you know, ants in all the electrical components. And
yeah.
I just wondered what is behind all that.
Well, for the long that's a great question, Chris. For a long, long time, people hypothesized that they were attracted to the electrical current because they'll get in fuse boxes, anything electric like that, and they did a study on it where they actually exposed fire ants to electrical currents, and that's not what was attracting them at all. Two things were happening here. One is they wanted to build their nest in that area because of the conductive heat. You know, an air conditioner heats up, and the fire ants will be attracted to that heat because insects in general develop according to the temperature. So the higher the temperature, the faster the development, the more the colony can grow. But what they did find out, which was absolutely fascinating, is that when an ant did accidentally get electrocuted, then the other ants were not attracted to the electricity, but they were attracted to the smell of the burning ant body. And so more would come in there, and more would get electrocuted, and then more would come in there, and more would get electrocuted, and it was just like lemurs falling off a cliff, just one after the other.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that neat? I remember when I read that, I thought, how I would have loved to have been in that room when they figured that out. I mean, what a revelation, you know?
It really is, and I get more queries about that than just about anything. So that's pretty eye-opening there. So
yeah, and as you know, a lot of the air conditioners are on a concrete slab.
Uh-huh.
And that concrete slab is also a good heat conductor. If you go out to a golf range or out to a park, you will see more fire ant mounds along concrete sidewalks than you will out in an open field.
Wow. Okay, that's interesting.
Well, that's what I'm here for, Chris, to amuse and amaze everybody about the insect world. And thank you so much for your call. That was a great question.
Well, thank you, Dr. Burton. I appreciate your program. Thank you.
You're welcome. Right.
Thank you. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. We have all lines open right now. You'll get right in, 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. In the meantime, we've got a photo sent to us from someone in Florida, Shanna Smith. And she found these on the underside of a leaf. And at first I saw them and I thought of those pus caterpillars that you had talked about last year. But these are not caterpillars at all, are they?
No, they're not. They are something that is called galls, G-A-L-L-S. Or sometimes you might look them up and they're referred to as Cecidia. And these are actually benign tumor growths on plants. But what causes the benign tumor growths on plants, and it can be on the leaves, it can be on the stems, the trunk, and sometimes even the roots, is that in my world that I deal with, like insects and mites, what happens is that an immature insect will burrow into the plant tissue, and their saliva will create a chemical reaction that will stimulate the plant to produce two different types of growth hormones, something that's called auxins and cytokinins. And basically a little growth will start to occur, and it's hollow inside, and the little insect, as it develops, will feed on the nutrients that the plant provides, and it has a nice little house to live in at the same time. And they can be fuzzy, like the ones in this picture. They can be the size of marbles. They can be like little dimples, or sometimes they're even something like a outgrowth finger growth. And so next time, here in the area, one of the most noticeable are goldenrod galls, and they'll form on the stem, and those are quite noticeable. But if you ever see, it can also be caused by fungus and some bacteria, and sometimes these little bitty roundworms that we call nematodes, but a lot of them are insect and mite related, and they come in all kinds of shapes, color, texture, and they're called galls. And back in the old days, they actually used to catch or collect these galls because they're very high in tannic acid, and they would make a solution in order to cure out hides.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and you can give us a call now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We go next to Richard from El Dorado. Richard, what's bugging you tonight?
Yes, I'd like to hear Dr. Burden discuss what I've heard called volcano ants, the little ant that builds a series of volcano appearing mounds across a gravel road or something.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I've seen those, and there are many different species of ants, and I could not tell you what species they are, but they are native to the area, and you're absolutely right. They do prefer a rougher ground, and one reason is because that gives them a little bit more building material. And again, it's also a heat factor, just like I was talking about with the fire ants. And so I will try to look up the actual species name. And next August, in August, I think we're on the 20th.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And on August the 20th, I'll come back and talk about volcano ants a little bit more. That happens all the time, and I love it when I have something new to investigate. And so we'll make that as a point of emphasis on the August the 20th, What's Bugging You, that starts at 6 o'clock.
I tried looking them up one time, and the source said that they were a predictor of rain. And I think I would have to question that.
There's a lot of things that they say that are predictors of weather, you know, like the little woolly bear caterpillars, depending on the width of their black band, is supposed to be either a mild winter or a harder winter. And as we know, Richard, people have been trying to predict the weather for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, and we're better at it, but I wouldn't rely on those type of parameters to do it. Now, there are a lot of things in the animal world that can be some predictors of winterlings and some other things, but I wouldn't think it would be ants. There you have it. And
thank you,
Richard. And before we take the next call, Bill, what I was also going to say about these galls, if you're curious, like I always am, if you take a sharp razor blade and cut those in half, sometimes you can actually see the little insect in there.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And most of the time, they're little wasps or they're little flies.
Interesting. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And we might have time for another call if you want to call in, but do it quickly. We've got one more online right now. Tom from Shreveport, what's bugging you tonight?
Yeah, I'm in Shreveport, and when it rains, we have these little tiny bugs, hundreds and hundreds of them that come through underneath a door. They look like tiny shrimp. They might be maybe 2 or 3 millimeters long, and they don't cause any problem. They just die there. I'm just curious what they are.
There are freshwater, what we call amphipods, and they do look like little bitty shrimp, and so they're just little crustaceans. You nailed it. That's exactly what they are.
Oh, that's really interesting. I was just kind of curious because it happens every time we have a real heavy rain down here. And
And the water gets pretty up close to the house, I would assume.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, because they're not going to crawl from like a pond up the backyard to the back door. They would have to be fairly close to get into the house.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. I was really curious about that.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for your call, Tom.
Okay. Right. You're welcome. Bye.
Thank you, Tom. And it sounds like the tide went out and left them up there.
Uh-huh.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. We did have one caller call in and didn't want to go online, and that person wants to know how to keep mosquito bites from itching.
Well, I tell you, I am one of these people that have a very strong reaction to mosquito bites, and I've tried the cortisone cream, and that doesn't work very well. Sometimes Benadryl spray will work a little bit, but what I personally have found is if I apply witch hazel, get a cotton ball and put witch hazel on it and put that on the mosquito bite, that seems to soothe the itching. It kind of, it's an astringent, so it kind of dries it out a little bit. And so that's would be my home remedy. But go ahead and try the cortisone cream and the Benadryl. And some people even like to use rubbing alcohol, apply that. But anything that's going to be cool and soothing is probably going to be one of your best things to go to.
All right. And finally, we have one more photo over there that we've given Dr. Burton. And this is of a kind of a creepy little creature. Mark Vinson submitted this and wanted to know what that was. And we have about a minute left so we can get through that.
Yeah, it's it has an elongated orange body with black and light colored banding on the legs. Very long antenna. And if you look at the picture close enough, right where the middle legs are attached to the body, there's a little set of wing pads there. And this belongs to a group of insects known as Hemipterans, and they also go by the name of true bugs. And they have a beak that they use to feed on. They're either predators or plant feeders. And they always have such interesting colorations and patterns until they get their full-grown wings in. And then when they get their full-grown wings in, people never send me pictures of the adults. They always, it's these immatures that look so weird. Mm-hmm. And I would not mess with them because they do have a capacity to bite you. And so there's something that maybe we ought to talk about in August too, Bill. And these belong to a larger group that's called the kissing bugs.
Uh-huh.
And that's something that is coming into the media and is hitting a lot of publications are focusing on the kissing bug that can transmit a disease known as Chagas disease.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll hit that in the August show as well.
All right. And Dr. Burton, I want to thank you for joining us once again for What's Bugging You.
It's my pleasure, Bill. I can talk about insects all day long.
All right. Well, we'll do an all-day show sometime. You've been listening to What's Bugging You with Dr. Beverly Burton, an associate professor of biology at LSUS and Red River Radio's resident entomologist. We want to thank each of you for calling in tonight and helping us out, and especially those who sent photos. This program is made possible by the Noel Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. You can tune in next for the next show of What's Bugging You on August 20th, and the next show of Bird Calls is on August 13th. What's Bugging You is produced by Bill Beckett and Renee Moran with help from Wally Derleth, Sheila Lawrence, and Tim Schnell. And Dr. Beverly Burton, again, is our resident entomologist. You are listening to Red River Radio, and we are your community-supported public broadcasting service from LSUS, KDAQ, Shreveport-Bossier City, KLSA Alexandria Pineville, KBSA El Dorado Camden Magnolia, KLDN Lufkin Nacogdoches, and KTYK Overton Tyler Kilgore. Stay tuned, Radio Lab is coming up next.